Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen.
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. Thank you so much for tuning in with us. As always, every week we are here. Live tonight, hosted by Crave Wrestling. I am Chris Featherstone, along always with Ryan Fuqua.
Good evening out there, Pancake and Power Slam fans. No way out of this show today. Showing a little love to the pay-per-view coming up.
Yes, after a hiatus, so it'll be interesting to see what it has to offer. So, for all the callers, call in. Number is 347-884-8452. Once again, 347-884-8452. As always, chat room's up and running. And log on to the chat room, and we'll be taking callers here real soon. Thank you so much for joining in with us. Call in, go to the chat room, and of course, as we do every week, every comment that is worthy or deemed worthy of being said, we will make it happen. And thank you so much for tuning in with us. As we do always every week, we will go into last week's errors. Last week's errors was Randy Orton was suspended April and August of 2006. I believe 2007 was mentioned. And Dolph Ziggler, his last clean solo pay-per-view win was against John Morrison at Survivor Series 2011. So we have, an 8-month streak of no pay-per-view clean solo win. So that's rather bad for his track record. So, this week's news, we have Kelly taking time off from WWE. And then it was updated that she signed a long-term contract, which I personally, it's not really any big news to me. I really don't have any type of care about it, honestly. She's been boring to me for quite some time. John Laurinaitis, he's removed as executive vice president. He's an on-air talent only. Triple H would be overseeing the talent operations. R-Truth breaks his foot, and as we kind of saw on the air, we kind of saw what's going on with that, how that played out. And the top story is Alberto Del Rio is out of No Way Out as a result of suffering a concussion competing against, when Sheamus came, allegedly he got the concussion hitting the WWE sign when Sheamus had his had their little scuffle on SmackDown, but they played it on Raw as if Khali did it. But I guess Khali's best moment of the past few years was giving Alberto Del Rio a concussion. So, so we will go on to Raw as we do every week here. Interesting Raw segment. Raw started off first. with John Laurinaitis and Vince McMahon segment. Vince's pop was quite enormous, and they had a back-and-forth segment, John Laurinaitis explaining to Vince McMahon why he should stay, and Vince McMahon taking interesting personal jabs at him. And he said one thing that was quite interesting. I'll go to that quote in a minute here. Sheamus comes out. He explains to John Laurinaitis why he is the worst GM in history after first using the word friend. John Laurinaitis gets upset, and he goes to the back to pick an opponent for Sheamus. And Vince tells John Laurinaitis that if every match is not impressive, the infamous two words, you're fired. One interesting thing about this segment I noticed was he made a comment, and he said this is a true story. He said that you hired the wrong one-legged wrestler. So yeah. there was only one one-legged wrestler that we saw, and that was Zach Gowen. So I wonder if that, I mean, he said it was a true story, so it makes me wonder if that was a personal jab to Gowen, because that came out of anywhere. But I'll say this, I like how the WWE is blurring, you know, reality and fiction by just taking kind of like, you know, shoot jabs, you know, verbally. We see it a lot, actually. Triple H has done it, Punk has done it, Vince has done it. So it's an interesting extra element to WWE program that we've seen in recent.
Yeah, it seems as if CM Punk maybe goes out of his way each week. He tries to find something to kind of throw in there like that. Good to see Vince. I know it's somebody like him, hard to hear the crowd and see all these crowds and not get to come out, you know. He sees it every night. So, you know, his ego, I'm sure, that was awesome for him. Get back out there after, what, like a 9-month hiatus?
October. That's when they said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's crazy. I noticed when he pushed Laurinaitis' scooter off the stage, maybe it's just me, but that stage used to seem a lot higher.
Yeah, it did.
Like it was about 3 feet off the ground. That was pretty funny to me. That's really it, man. That was pretty cool to see Vince throughout the night, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for all that are holding. We will be taking calls soon here. Call in 347-884-8452. We're going to recap and analyze Raw here and let us know your Raw analysis. Then we go on to Tensai being Sheamus' opponent. Of course, Sheamus defeats him. My question is, how was Tensai ever considered a main eventer? It seems like he's gaining more weight and getting slower every single week. I just don't understand how he was. I mean, he was handpicked to... allegedly handpicked to feud against Punk, Cena, be Laurinaitis' henchman. It's just so much. it was just so much stock on Tensai, and I just really don't understand how it ever existed. We got more Albert chants, and it got louder. And so, I kind of want to say poor Tensai, but not really. He can only do what he's, you know, what he's, you know, played to do. But, if he has any type of voice in the back, I mean, I would definitely, if I was him, I would definitely have a really big heart-to-heart, you know, chat with Vince McMahon, because I can see Tensai, it would make sense for him to keep going a losing streak and leave for, I mean, 4, 5, 6 months, come back as some rugged heel, and have his Albert, even his Albert gear, because back when he was Albert, he wore like a black shirt with just some pants and just some type of rugged heel gimmick. I would be a lot better with that than just this Tensai thing. His paint, his markings are smearing every week, and then this is getting worse and worse. And later on in the show, a little bit after that, after this match, we saw just the worst of it all. We'll get to that later. But yeah, just Tensai, it was just a no-brainer who was going to win this match to me.
Oh yeah, it's a crowd was basically just crickets and Albert chants. So that pretty much sums it up. I even seen a Tensai is Albert sign. So that was funny. I don't know. They just need to admit defeat. I did. So they should just admit defeat with Tensai as well. The beatdown, it was lame and boring. Does nothing for the fans. Doesn't make him more aggressive because we don't really care about Sakamoto to have, you know, feel sorry for him. And I don't know, maybe it's just me, but it seemed like between the two of them, Sheamus and Tensai, it seems like there was some potato shots, and they were aggressively hitting each other through the mat. So,
yeah,
that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Then we saw a backstage segment when Vicky pitches Ziggler and Swagger to be opponents for Sheamus. And Teddy suggests a fatal four-way between four world champions, those two that I mentioned, along with Kali and Christian. Laurinaitis approves that and actually said it was his idea. Tries to fist bump Vince McMahon to no avail. Interesting little humorous backstage segment. It was kind of funny how Vince was just kind of playing Laurinaitis all night, but I still don't know exactly what they're going to do with Teddy Long. Maybe he is matchmaker and Laurinaitis gets the credit. I just don't quite know what they're going to do, what they're doing with him now. It's good to still see him on air, but no Eve. Interestingly enough, only Eve we saw was the backstage fallout plug that they had. So I wonder what's up with that.
Yeah, and she was still unbelievable on that, so whatever. But it's funny because they make Laurinaitis, he's not actually intimidated by the McMahon character, so it's actually a little funny, but it does seem like Laurinaitis was messing up spots a little more last night. I don't know what was up with that. Like, he's fumbling over his words a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Then we saw, Ryan mentioned it already, but Tensai beats up Sakamoto. To me, it was just the nail in the coffin. No one cared. It was just, like you said, crickets. It wasn't even Albert chance. He couldn't even get that much at that segment. It was just so quiet. It was just, I don't know how long the segment was, you know, from top to bottom, but It seemed like it got worse and worse as it went along. So it's really sad just to see what they're going to what they're doing with him. And it just seems like he now more than ever he has absolutely no direction.
Yeah, it seemed like he was the one getting beat down, like he was getting written off the television. That's how I took it. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Then we saw R-Truth a backstage interview. He's a proponent of John Cena beating Big Show, and then he gets hit with the WMD. Looks like they may sell that some time off because he did break his foot. So we'll see how that pans out. Then we saw a weird mixed tag team match: Ricardo Rodriguez and Beth Phoenix. They defeated Santino and Layla. Interesting little tidbit I noticed there. History between Santino and Beth Phoenix is Glamorella. Our first diva spot in 2 full weeks. Then the Justin Bieber shirt by Ricardo Rodriguez. I guess that was just to kind of a play on just Rodriguez's character, which is pretty funny, actually. And then, unfortunately, after seeing No Divas for 2 weeks, Layla still has the same old song. So, just an odd segment to me. Just a really the champ. Both the U.S. and the Divas champ, they lost, and Rodriguez wasn't even wrestling. Maybe it seemed like Beth Phoenix. They went to Beth Phoenix to take the fall because to set her up for Layla again. But just the Divas division altogether is just getting really lackluster. It wasn't anything, you know, to talk about in the first place in quite some time, but it seemed like it's an all-time low now.
Yeah, to go 2 weeks without even mentioning a diva, that's pretty bad. Crickets, though, more crickets came up this time for Layla, and I'm pretty sure it has something to do, like you said, with that theme. I mean, it just doesn't fit at all, so I can move on from that. She was actually... I felt like she was the only one that didn't belong in this match. Like, you could probably tell a better story if they would have used a different diva, maybe. Ricardo Rodriguez he's definitely the best comic relief superstar on the roster. I mean, Santino held that spot a long time, but it's Ricardo Rodriguez's money. It's hilarious, and... you could tell he has the skill there. Like, I know he's a wrestler, but yeah, you can see, like I said, the cross bodies and everything. I love it, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, he's hilarious. It all started in the Royal Rumble. That was his all time high moment to me. It was absolutely hilarious, and it's interesting that we see this now between Santino and Rodriguez, but it even started then because they had a little comic relief spot in the ring at that time, and Santino actually eliminated Ricardo Rodriguez. So, interesting little history lesson there. Then we see a backstage segment. John Laurinaitis, he books Kofi versus Big Show in a cage. Then we see a Daniel Bryan promo. And just one line from here to me was just really awkward. Once you go Bryan, there's no point in trying. Okie dokie. He gets interrupted. What's that?
No, I was just laughing at that. Yeah, it makes no sense.
Then he gets interrupted by CM Punk. And then they get interrupted by Kane, then AJ, and then Laurinaitis appears on the screen and issues a match between Kane and Bryan and Punk and AJ for the evening. Good mic work by AJ. I'm telling you, she's just growing more and more on me. I'm really, really liking AJ's character. Looks like they're just developing it from the ground up, and I'm a big fan of it. Punk, he kind of cut a heel promo. And he was talking about the spot, you know, the shoot promo that last year, and it was just kind of weird to me. Maybe that's some type of cryptic message to see how the audience was reacted to it, because I have noticed some boos lately. His character is getting a bit stale, but he was saying that he doesn't like the people who, you know, talks about that. So just really odd to me. Don't really understand how that benefited him at all. And last thing I'd say about this is a good Shane McMahon mentioned by Kane. Always good to hear him, and I would just love to see him back again, but he has his own business and doing a lot of things there. So interesting little segment there, and a few interesting spots in that moment.
Yeah, Kane has definitely has a lot of raw moments. Didn't mention anything about Katie Vick, but that's neither here nor there. I think Punk's promo is kind of fueled on all the has he sold out reports and everything like that lately. I've been seeing the past 2 weeks the internet wrestling community. Maybe that's what it was about, because it kind of seemed like he was going out of his way to subliminally saying he hasn't sold out, and even went out of his way to say superstar instead of wrestler. Can't remember exactly what he said, but he was aiming it towards Brian, and he used the word superstar. AJ, I like her character, but I still don't need her for this story, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I like the character, but I think the story could have thrived without.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how it pans out, for sure. Then we saw the four-way match. Dolph Ziggler gets the fall. He defeats Jack Swagger, Great Khali, and Christian. To me, it was this also was just a no-brainer. It was interesting. It was a good match, and it was interesting to see that it was an elimination match. I didn't catch that stipulation throughout the evening, but that always adds a good element to it. So I'm definitely fine with that. And out of all the four, I would have definitely picked Ziggler. I wouldn't have had a problem with Swagger too, honestly. I'm fine with it. It's cool with me. It works. So kudos to Ziggler. We'll get to our predictions, No Way Out predictions soon, and we'll be taking calls about that and also about Raw here coming up soon. 347-884-8452. So thank you everyone who was holding. It's going to be a good match. And out of the four, I'm happy that Ziggler was the choice to take the fall and go against Sheamus at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, you had to go Ziggler. Absolutely had to. I mean, he was the best out of all of them to, getting there with Sheamus. But it's funny. You take out Alberto Del Rio, and it's really not that big a deal. Like, this is why I said he's okay, but he doesn't need to be thrusted into World Heavyweight Championship material. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to enjoy seeing Sheamus and Ziggler more than I am Sheamus and Del Rio. But I will say this, Christian and Ziggler, when it came down to those two, that was all those two counts, that was pretty cool. They put on a nice showing there. I know Ziggler won last night, but it's not technically a win unless he wins it. No Way Out, man. I don't know. Maybe this is some shock value out of somewhere, and he actually wins. I don't know. Maybe this was their plan. It'd be crazy, but definitely be a... They said they were going to do something shocking for the summer. Maybe this is it.
Well, we'll get to the prediction soon, and find out if one or both of us think that will actually happen. So then we saw a backstage segment with Vince, Natalya, including Vince, Natalya, the Funkadactyls, and Zack Ryder. Just a random Natalya appearance. That's cool. I like Natalya. I'm cool with that. The Funkadactyls and then Zack Ryder afterwards. That was just the funniest segment of the night to me. That was just hilarious. Interesting decision to have the Funkadactyls kind of be their own personal identity and talk and do things like that. So I'm cool with that. Good idea. And then the whole somebody call my mama segment out of that. That was hilarious. Totally a fan of that. Kudos to the writing team in that area for that backstage segment. And always good to see this man kind of break out of character a little bit. So it was pretty funny to me.
Yeah, the stiff movements by Vince McMahon. Wouldn't exactly call it dancing. It was just more of a stiff moving.
Yeah, it was quite funny. And then we get the ride back once again. He defeats two other funny names. Willard Fillmore and Rutherford P.S. Hayes. You know, if I'm not mistaken, those are two the dead presidents. So just the names that they come up with, just with these jobbers are just hilarious. But at least we saw some direction with Ryback, and that is he now said, "Feed me three." So, I guess next we will get three people instead of two. That's just as bad. But yeah, it's ridiculous. I don't understand why they would do something like that. But yeah, Millard Fillmore is the is a former president, and Rutherford Hayes as well. But Rutherford B. Hayes. So I don't know. I don't know what the creative was thinking when they came up with those. Maybe someone who's into presidents or something. I'm not sure, but yeah, just they have to do something with this guy. They have no other choice. They just really have to do something with him, because just the squash matches are just getting worse. It's getting tougher and tougher to look at for me.
Yeah, they'll feed him three at the pay per view and try to make it seem like a legit match. Because I'm guessing Last Over the Limit is when they started doing the two superstars. I don't know. That's probably all right. But, yeah, they'll feed him three and No Way Out and expect us to take it seriously. And
yeah.
Like I said, I don't even like talking about it, man, because there's no – he's fighting these little scrawny dudes. I don't understand it. So what happens when he goes to – somebody his size, you know, that's, I don't know, 6'4", 250-plus pounds, you know? Is he going to be able to take more? Is he going to look small? So, I don't know.
That's a good point.
I don't like talking about it. I don't have many words for it, man. I mean, we could start skipping his spot, honestly. It's that bad.
You know, if there may be some callers and some listeners out there that that are huge Ryback fans, so we have to please the people and keep the spot for the sake of the people.
I'm sorry, we're trying.
Yeah, it's getting as tough as talking about Tensai, to be honest with you. So
yeah, I mean, there's nothing to talk about.
yeah, that's true. The names, at least, is what we got from that. So, then we saw another backstage segment. It consists of Vince McMahon, Hornswoggle, and then John Cena and Otunga, and then Regal at the end. I tell you what, I was not a fan of this segment at all. I was actually pretty upset about it. I honestly believe that the Jim Ross bit was pretty tasteless. I just wasn't okay with it. Just because of that. I was wondering. I was wondering why they decided to do that, and the big deal in the beginning was it was tasteless when Ed Ferrara did it back when he was Oklahoma in WCW, but Vince did it, so I didn't like it at all. It was tasteless to me. But at the end was pretty funny. It was a little relieving. So the whole Regal, you know, kiss my butt type of reference there, and Regal was on the chair. So, of course, as many people know, I'm a Regal fan. It was good to see him on Raw.
Yeah, definitely good, man. You go back and look at that footage, though. It's funny because Regal's got the longer hair now, and he kind of had, like, the buzz cut going on back when he was in the Kiss My Butt Club. But, yeah, that was so long ago. I guess I'm with you. This promo or this spot didn't do anything for me. I did like the Hornswoggle, JR's Hornswoggle on SmackDown, but we'll talk about that later. But, yeah, it didn't do anything for me. I thought Cena and McMahon talking, I thought it'd be a little more aggression there or something, but it just, I don't know. The exchange was just blah for the boss and your biggest superstar. It was just like, huh, okay, that's cool.
Yeah. That's true. All right, then we saw Big Show defeated Kofi Kingston on in a steel cage match. You know, at least Kofi got some offense. I understand, you know, what they were doing, and you know, I wasn't too opposed with the cage match. So yeah, I just don't understand just why they would do a cage match like that. But I wasn't too opposed to it. But I guess to gain heel heat, they've been pulling out all the stops to try to gain heat with Big Show as of late. So yeah, at least Kofi got some offense. The only other thing that I just don't like about this, honestly, is that I don't think that any champion should be in spots like that. If you're going to make someone champion, I don't care if U.S. Tag Team, Intercontinental, if you're going to make someone champion, you got to give them better spots than that to me. Because, you know, I'm a traditionalist, and I still believe in the prestige of the titles. So I wasn't a fan of that at all. I kind of wish they would have chose someone else, honestly, than Kofi. But I understood why they did it, because he gave R-Truth the WMD, and it just made sense to do it. But you know, he beat up Alex Riley, so you know, Alex Riley and Big Show would have been a nice little match to me, because you know, we're both Riley fans, and a Raw Riley spot in a cage would have been a really good moment, but. That was my beef with that match.
Yeah, I agree, because I asked myself the same thing. It's like, why do you have to show or use the tag champs to show Big Show's dominance? And it's not like it was just last night. You know, he beat him up a couple weeks ago. So not understanding why they're using those two. Like we were talking about another day, maybe it's just a roster depth thing. But instead of having a cage match, I guess they could have had Show just beat down Kofi and maybe have them lower a cage and do something like that. I don't know. Maybe it would have seemed more aggressive, or kind of not taken away from the cage match at the pay-per-view.
Right.
And then the only other thing here, my main thing, is Kofi needs new music immediately. I mean, it was crazy, because I was all pumped, like, yay, challenge Show, and this should be good. And then, you know, his music hits, and I'm like, I just can't get all the way there for him, man. Like, I like him, but it's like, I need something more aggressive, something that's going to, as soon as the crowd hears, they jump up, you know.
Yeah.
That would have helped if he had that type of music there and just make the crowd go wild. That's probably how he gets the crowd 100% behind him with a different theme.
Yeah. Yep. Feel free to call in. We'll be taking calls real soon. Wrapping up on a Raw recap here. The number is 347-884-8452. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be taking calls here really soon. Thank you all for holding, and we'll be more than happy to take your call. 347-884-8452. Then we saw Sin Cara versus Curt Hawkins. Your boy Hawkins got a spot here. Kudos to your boy Curt Hawkins. Put on a decent match with Sin Cara. Sin Cara, I tell you what, like I said, I've been pretty impressed with him. And I don't know exactly what they're going to do with him. Like, there's so many wrestlers without directions. We'll get to that probably another time. But there's just a number of wrestlers without any direction, just winning a bunch of matches, and then we don't see them on the pay-per-view, and then we just see them win more matches on Raw and SmackDown. So just not a big fan of that. But, you know, Sin Cara is getting better and better for me.
Yeah, this is nice stuff by these two, man. It's but now I guess it'd be time to, after this pay-per-view, start Sin Cara in a feud since he's been back for multiple weeks. Actually wouldn't be opposed to maybe seeing him and Hawkins in a feud because, like I said, that's my guy. I'd be able to see him on TV a little more, and I thought they put together a nice little spot here, so that was pretty cool. And then it was Hawkins with no Rex out there. I don't know if that's just because of the lighting with Sin Cara's one-on-one matches or what, but that was the first time I've seen him, you know, them without the other in a long time.
Yeah.
Crazy gear by Hawkins, man.
I noticed that, too.
And boots combo there.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Then we saw a backstage segment. Vince McMahon and Daniel Bryan, kind of like what I said earlier. Bryan kind of blurred between, you know, shoot and kayfabe. He mentioned that he was fired once, and it was a pretty interesting little dialogue between Vince and Daniel Bryan. He kind of put him down a little bit. It was just saying if he carried groceries, you know, I wouldn't, you know, I'm paraphrasing, I wouldn't, you know, think that he wouldn't think that he was a threat if he was, you know, carrying groceries and things like that. So kind of downplayed him a little bit. But, you know, it was an interesting little dialogue between the two.
Yeah, crazy to see Vince and Daniel Bryan on the same screen in the promo there. So, you know, times have changed.
Yeah.
Then he mentioned something about not selling or losing in 18 seconds and whatever, and it just made me think, like, no matter what Vince McMahon does, we will never forget the XFL. That could have been Daniel Bryan's comeback.
Yeah. Or the WBO, the World Boxing Organization that they had.
Yeah.
So that was also a flop, so... And possibly, and as we're seeing now, WWE Studios isn't a good investment either. So,
yeah.
So that's the trifecta of Vince's business faux pas. And then my favorite segment of the night. I'm old school all the way, man, and it was great. It was definitely a little bitty mark out moment for me. Because he's Slater, I tell you what, he played it really well, and he was saying it's Slater time, it's time. I was like, oh my goodness, are they really gonna do it? Because they were plugging an old, you know, name and you know, getting ready for the 1,000th episode, because that's also some news for those who don't know. They're trying to acquire as many people. They're just trying to pull out of stops, kind of make it kind of like pay-per-view caliber for the 1,000th Raw episode on the 23rd of July. And they actually contacted The Undertaker, and they're trying to get everything solidified with him, and so they can start advertising him. It's always good to, you know, have nostalgic moments like that, and I was pretty excited to see who the older guy was, and I was hoping that it was somebody different than the normals, which is Piper, Slaughter, possibly Snuka, Tony Atlas, Ted DiBiase, Mike Rotunda, or Irwin R. Shyster. Those are the normals. I wanted to see somebody other than that. And I tell you what, Vader came out, and I loved it. He looks like he swallowed Pluto, but he still, you know, for someone of his age, he still, you know, had some moves and still had the smash mouth wrestling style like he did of old, and the little Vader shuffle was a good thing to see too. And he played to the crowd. He always had a good job doing that. He played to that crowd, and he I mean, he just ate all of it up as far as just the pops that he was receiving and the You Still Got It and the Vaders, and it was great. I loved it. I loved every second of it, and I think Heath Slater was a good choice to help carry the match too. So big kudos to that segment.
Oh, heck yeah. I was really happy to see that, and I was like you too when he said Slater time. I was like, oh, okay, wow, this is about to happen. Then it was that he, you know, he actually had a match. It wasn't a quick squash. That was shocking to me. Felt like I was 10 years old again, though, so that's funny. And then I liked, I don't know if you could hear that, how Cole had said his first time he's ribbed that story, saying Vince McMahon telling him to try on Vader's mask to see if it fit, saying how funky it was. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, he's not the only person that has made mention of that before. Actually, Vader and Mankind's Max were both had ribs of smelling pretty bad. So, yeah, interesting little tidbit there. Call in if you want to be live on air and let us know your raw thoughts. The number is 347-884-8452. So we got CM Punk and AJ defeated Daniel Bryan and Kane. And then AJ plants a huge kiss on Kane, and Punk takes the fall. So it led a little bit of suspicion to me. Because, hey, I was thinking, okay, so if Punk and AJ beats Daniel Bryan and Kane, maybe CM Punk may lose the title. If he takes the fall on Raw, because it would just make sense. I mean, it was just a clean pin, you know, on Daniel Bryan. So,
yeah.
You know, that was the only thing that I got from that. The whole AJ playing a huge kiss on Kane. That was pretty interesting because they are exactly 20 years apart. Not exactly as far as birthdays, but as far as years are concerned, AJ's 25 and Kane is 45. So, you know, it's like, hey, let me plant a big kiss on Dad, you know. So it was a little odd to me. Maybe we will see something different come out of No Way Out than we expected.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm guessing AJ is going to influence that match somehow. I mean, that's pretty much, I'm sure, why she's been involved in this storyline. And like you said, that's why Punk got the clean pin and everything. So I'm pretty sure she'll do something to affect the outcome. It wouldn't make sense for Punk to retain here after going out on Raw like that. But still, I mean, I was just during this, I was like, what is going on? It's just weird to me. And then at the beginning there, that little promo before they had when she was freaking out backstage, it kind of made CM Punk a little vulnerable. And I don't know, man. I'm just keep making him a little bit vulnerable in these feuds. And how can he be the king of pipe bombs and all this and best in the world when he's vulnerable?
Yeah, very true. Very true. Next call, the next person who calls in will give you a bit of some time to let us know what you thought of Raw. So the number is 347-884-8452. Then we go into John Laurinaitis' and Vince McMahon segment, last segment of the night, interrupted by Big Show. Tell you what, man, Big Show's promo to Vince was seemed like he really had some moments. He seemed like he had to draw back a couple times because it kind of seemed like it was some shoot involved as far as the things that he was saying. Because I tell you what, I mean, he did make a couple good points. I mean, you know, for someone to be just the poster boy of jobbing to just random people and being used as, you know, just a prop, you know, to gain other people's notoriety, such as Shaq and Aki Bono and Mayweather and things like and people like that. I tell you what, I mean, I couldn't dispute, you know, his point that he was making. So he did cut a good promo there. Cena comes out, cuts a really good promo. Then Big Show and Cena, they get broken up by security. Laurinaitis and McMahon, and then Show accidentally hits McMahon with the WMD and lays him out, and saw some pictures on WWE.com where some referees had to carry him in the back. This adds a bit more suspense too, because it would seem that they would do something more than this, so they would pass this on more than just tonight. So it'll be interesting to see if they do something with this, which I believe they should.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't like the stipulation on the cage match now, because for me it's, and we'll talk about that when we get to No Way Out. I'll favor for it, but yeah, it was a good promo by Cena. Finally won in a few weeks that I've liked. And then the only other thing here, Cena says you've been a giant for the 14 years or whatever you've been in this business or, you know, with WWE. And then it made me realize, I never really thought about this, a new Big Show, of course, winning the WCW and WWE title, but I never thought about it. He did that before the year 2000. That's crazy.
Wow.
Feat, man. I mean, especially, yeah, when you think about it, because he won the WWE title in Survivor Series of 2000. Or Survivor Series of 99, I'm
99,
sorry.
99, yeah.
Yeah, it was a triple threat against Rock and Triple H. So
yep.
That's, I mean, and to still be around, that's a pretty crazy feat.
Yeah.
12 years later.
Yeah. And so that was, 99 was his first title win, and then his other one was, what, 02? When he won, when he was with Heyman, when he won the WWE title. The Undisputed, yeah. So, yeah, because, or it may have been, it was 03, because 02, 01, well, it might have been 02. We'll see. That's our,
Lesnar was coming up in 02.
Yeah, Lesnar was, because he won, well,
him was Angle feuded,
well,
for like
it might have,
2003.
It might have been 02, because 02 was when Lesnar took the Undisputed title to SmackDown. And 02 was when the World Heavyweight Championship came, and the big first SmackDown feud of Brock Lesnar was Angle and Show, and they kind of traded titles during that time. That's when Show still had like the buzz cut with the singlet top and the pants. So that was quite awkward. So we'll get the accurate date and pay-per-view and year of when he won it, but I believe it was 02. It might have been 03, so we'll definitely address that next week. Or if anybody in the chat room knows, we'll take that too. So, yeah, that was Raw, and we'll see how this leads up to the pay-per-view. In SmackDown, we had Alberto Del Rio segment interrupted by Sheamus, and who was Ricardo Rodriguez, and then eventually the real Sheamus. Tay Long plays acting general manager and issues some matches. Alberto Del Rio defeats the Great Khali. Big Show video promo. We got Brodus Clay was told that he was no longer allowed on Raw, and he defeats Derek Bateman. Then we saw Booker T's favorite Raw moment was his match versus Bagwell. Definitely have something to say about that soon. Sin Cara defeats Drew McIntyre. Ryback defeats Tony Androidis and Kevin Mahoney. Peep Show with Cody Rhodes and Christian. Cody Rhodes actually interferes in the Peep Show. Christian defeats Dolph Ziggler. Antonio Cesaro defeats Jimmy Uso. Sheamus' favorite moment was the Breakthrough Battle Royal. And Sheamus defeats Kane by disqualification. Ricardo Rodriguez interferes. Kane gets an advantage on Sheamus. He's about to choke slam him, but AJ comes out and gives him that look again and turns around to a bro kick, and the bro kicks Rodriguez to end the show. A few tidbits that I like about, that I have about this show. The whole Sheamus by Ricardo Rodriguez, just like you said, comic relief. It was absolutely funny. It was just hilarious to me. Loved the Big Show video promo. That was something that I've been waiting for quite some time. It was just really, really good. I was a big fan of it. Booker T's favorite Raw moment is really odd to me because I think that was one of the worst Raw moments ever, actually. That was the first and last match that Marcus Alexander or Buff Bagwell had in the WWE. He was canned soon after that match. It was one of the worst matches to see. If anybody could listening out there, YouTube that match, Booker T versus Buff Bagwell, Raw, I'm sure something to come up, but it was just an awful, awful match. And just the commentary was really awkward. I believe it was like Scott Hudson and Arn Anderson, and it was just really, really awkward. Sin Cara and Drew McIntyre was a really good match. Big fan of it. And then the Peep Show was a good segment. Dolph Ziggler still taking a job, but we saw him win on Raw, and we'll see what happens on Sunday. Tell you what, man, in a really awkward way, I'm starting to like Cesaro's music. I don't know why, but it plays into the whole rugby gimmick, and I'm starting to understand the music more now than I have been. So it fits. It fits the gimmick, and I can understand why they're doing that. And then the last thing I wanted to mention was the Breakthrough Battle Royal. Why was Orton in that match? I don't, because it was about people who haven't won titles,
yeah.
But Orton was in that match. So I have to do some research about that and just wonder what led Randy Orton to be in that match. I didn't quite understand. When I saw the video clip, I remember the Breakthrough Battle Royal, and then Sheamus further explained it, what it was for, and Orton won his first world title, you know, way back, and I don't remember that. It was, what, SummerSlam or Survivor Series? SummerSlam of 2004?
I think it was 2003.
2003?
Still the youngest champion ever.
Yeah, still the youngest ever. So, but yeah, that was what I got from SmackDown.
Yeah, I wonder why he was in there too. As soon as I seen him, but yeah, Cesaro's music. I said I liked it before. I know you weren't on board. But I did like it. And then what roster depth, hashtag that, why was he going against Jimmy Uso? And, you know, that was
Thing good call on that.
In a single, so, yeah. I told you I liked Hornswoggle and JR. That was funny to me. Sin Cara continues to impress me. McIntyre, though, I don't know what happened. Yikes. The Booker T flashback, I will agree with you, that match was awful, but it did remind me of my teenage years, so pretty cool seeing all these flashbacks, no matter how good or bad they are. And then Derek Bateman and Brodus Clay, I don't moving Clay to SmackDown is a bad idea to me. Real bad idea. It's not like people watch SmackDown as much as they do Raw. And,
yeah.
You know, he's got this big extravagant entrance. And I don't know, he's just there for the showmanship more than anything. And now on SmackDown, it's like the electricity isn't there. Not saying that somebody called my mama makes me get up out of my seat or cheer for him more, but it just, I don't know. It seems like a bad move just to move him to SmackDown like that. He seems like he's going to get stale real quick.
Mm-hmm. I actually have to tend to agree with that because, like I mentioned before, SmackDown wasn't as gimmicky as it is now. It was more competition and just, you know, just really, really good matches within the show, but it's getting a little bit too gimmicky for me, and I'm not a fan of it. Raw was more sports entertainment, you know, type of feel, and it would make sense. He would have been a better fit for Raw. So I'm just not really. I mean, the whole Super Show thing. I'm just not liking it because. At least SmackDown had a distinct element to it. It was more good matches, but it's getting a little bit too gimmicky, and it's getting actually more painful to watch, honestly, because they don't have really good directional feuds much. It's just kind of like a carryover from Raw, and I just don't really like how they're, you know, just kind of blurring the shows together because that was the point. The problem with SmackDown before is because it was just a kind of a carryover from Raw, and the split at least gave it some distinction. So a little bit too gimmicky, and I'm not really. You're right. I'm not liking Brodus Clay's, you know, just staying on SmackDown either. I agree with that. We will go on to Impact Wrestling. Feel free to call in 347-884-8452. Chat lines all. Open as well. Call in live. We will take your thoughts on Raw or SmackDown. We're going on to Impact Wrestling here. If you have any thoughts on Slammiversary, we'll get to that in a minute as well. We will go to Impact Wrestling and Slammiversary simultaneously. I guess you can say concurrently. Dixie Carter segment interrupted by Daniels and Kazarian. AJ makes a save, and Dixie's husband Surge comes out and hits Styles. Crimson defeats Austin Aries with Samoa Joe interference, which led to a match at Slammiversary. Crimson post-match promo and mentions Goldberg. Issues an open challenge at Slammiversary. We saw Hulk Hogan promo interrupted by Bobby Roode, and Sting comes out and beats up Roode. Miss Tessmacher defeats Velvet Sky, Mickie James, and Tara to become the number one contender at Slammiversary. We saw a Bully Ray and Joseph Park contract signing, interrupted by Abyss, and he said he'll be at Slammiversary. Joey Ryan backstage segment from the week prior. Then we saw Al Snow forcing him out of the building. Hogan is back in the ring, and he issues a three-way match between Hardy, RVD, and Anderson for the number one contenders match at the Slammiversary pay-per-view to be the number one contender to wrestle for the title at Impact Wrestling. And then we saw Sting, Angle, and AJ defeated Bobby Roode, Kazarian, and Daniels. This led up to Slammiversary on Sunday. Austin Aries defeated Samoa Joe. Hernandez defeated Kid Cash. We saw the top three moments throughout the pay-per-view. Moment number three was AJ Styles becoming the first X Division champion. D-Von and Garrett Bischoff defeats Robbie E and Robbie T. Mr. Anderson defeats Jeff Hardy and RVD to become the number one contender. James Storm defeats Crimson, ends his streak. Moment number two was Hogan signing with TNA. Sting was inducted. Well, he was mentioned. He was acknowledged to be inducted in the TNA Hall of Fame The actual induction ceremony will be in October. Their WrestleMania caliber pay-per-view, which is Bound for Glory, gets Daniel Bryan yes chance. Miss Texmacher defeated Gail Kim to win her first Knockouts title. Joseph Park defeated Bully Ray with help from Abyss, who was underneath the ring. But we'll get to that after I read the rest of the results here. Hogan introduces Christian Cage. He cuts a promo and introduces the number one moment, which was Sting returning to TNA in 2006, teaming with Christian to defeat Jeff Jarrett and Monty Brown. Kurt Angle and AJ Styles defeated Daniels and Kazarian. Bobby Roode defeated Sting to retain the world title, and then we saw a post-match beatdown by Sting to Roode. Good week of TNA wrestling to me. I wrote an article on Bleacher Report about the TNA. You know, of course, it's the number two show, but we're seeing Slammiversary. The competition isn't as far-fetched as we think. Of course, you know, you got the production, you got the budget, and you got the big names and the big pay-per-views, you know, like WrestleMania and Royal Rumble and so forth. So, you know, definitely not a number two spot anytime soon. But I'll tell you what, if TNA stays the route as they did with Slammiversary, they've got a very promising future. It was the live crowd. It was the best pay-per-view of the year, WWE and TNA, just because of the quality of matches was just amazing. Who would have thought a match between Hernandez and Kid Cash would be such a good match to watch? Maybe just it was just a bunch of different factors to me. The live crowd was just amazing in every match, and it really helped every match just really be even more exciting. Good to see Crimson Streak in. I was just so tired of that. And James Storm was a good person to end it. When he was waiting for people to when he was waiting for his opponent, I was wondering who it was, and just there were so many different options, but you know, there was a lot of Goldberg chants waiting for him to come out. But James Storm came out, and I said, oh, okay, well, I can handle James Storm. I can do with that. It's cool. Yes, thanks, my guy. He's my favorite all time. So I'm definitely happy that he got inducted to the TNA Hall of Fame. I actually wrote an article about it. A lot of reports was believing that Christian would have been the first person, but Sting was definitely a better choice because he was there. He really saw something in TNA when they really just had mostly homegrown talent, and he made an investment to be with them and really stayed loyal to them and helped them ascend to the status that they are now. The whole Joseph Park and Bully Ray thing was really cool. Abyss was underneath a hoodie. So if people don't know, I would imagine they do, but Joseph Park is Abyss. They're one of the same, but he's playing his quote-unquote brother. So it was good to see that spot there. But I was just, you know, Bobby Roode, he didn't beat Sting clean, so it didn't really hurt Sting, and Sting beats him down afterwards. So I think it was a well-written pay-per-view. I think it was really, really good. It was an amazing pay-per-view. It was just really not a lot of gimmicks, which I was cool with. It just really seemed like a glorified ROH show to me, which is a good thing. And so kudos to Slammiversary. Kudos to TNA with their pulling out all the stops with this type of pay-per-view. And I wrote down five things that TNA could do to help bridge, you know, help lessen the gap between them and WWE. So I got to give it to them. You know, TNA is on my good side now.
Yeah, it's funny because I could actually agree. It's getting better to me as I've been consistently watching it. At first, it was just kind of like, man, you got to give me something better. And I was feeling like Scott Steiner there and wanted to go on.
Good plug.
Yeah. But, no, yeah, I agree. It's definitely getting better. Looking at a lot of comments online and polls, seems as if a lot of people did enjoy Slammiversary. So that's awesome. The only thing I have here is the Sting thing being in the Hall of Fame. Like, I'm okay with it, but I, you know, because he deserves to be, I mean, he's wrestling Hall of Fame, period, you know.
Yeah.
Freaking Sting, that's a no-brainer. But, I don't know, I guess I would have went with, like, and this may be my TNA ignorance, I mean, I guess I would have probably went with someone like AJ Styles or Samoa Joe, just because I've always heard their name associated with TNA.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wouldn't. The only reason is why I wouldn't want to use Sting is just because, you know, his WCW days and coming from another brand. But I know, like you said, he helped them out, was vital to their success. I don't know. On one hand, I can definitely see it, but on another hand, I guess TNA isn't really known for being their own original thing. You know, they'll take whoever they can get, and you kind of have to when you're trying to compete with another company like that. But I'm okay with it. I'm definitely Sting over Christian Cage for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can actually vouch for you on that. There's some favoritism with Sting for me, but the two to me undoubtedly the first two that comes up would be Jeff Jarrett and AJ Styles, just because it is Jarrett's company. You know, it was Jarrett's company. He founded the company.
Where was he at?
And a lot of, you know, things have been going on around in during on the internet about Karen Jarrett being legitimately upset with Dixie Carter for not inducting Jarrett into the Hall of Fame. And I'll tell you what, I can, I'm a rational guy. I mean, I can understand, because, you know, he founded the company. He's no longer in top leadership of that nature. You know, Dixie Carter is legitimately the president of the company. Yeah, he founded it with his father Jerry, and he really took the company, you know, under his wing and was champ a little excessively, but, you know, he felt that he had to do that, kind of like Vern Gagne did in the AWA, was champion for years. So he felt the need to do that, and I understand why he did that, and I can reason with that. And like you said, AJ Styles, I mean, he was there since day one, and he's achieved, you know, all he can for the company, and as we saw on Sunday, he put another title under his notch and winning the tag team titles, which was an amazing, amazing match. Oh, that I can watch that match two times again. If that, I mean, probably more. Aries and Samoa Joe was amazing as well. But I definitely expected that. But yeah, I mean, just those four in the ring was all automatically just match of the year worthy in the first place. But that match was by far the best match I've seen all this year, and I don't see any other match topping that. That was a great match. But you're right, AJ Styles. I'm sure that next year it would seem that AJ Styles would be a shoe-in inductee to the Hall of Fame next year.
Yeah, that's pretty cool then. I don't know. Just Jeff Jarrett, like, I don't understand why he wasn't involved, you know, in that pay-per-view at all.
he was doing some work in Mexico for TNA for a little bit. He actually won a championship in Mexico, world championship in Mexico, but he's not the champion anymore. But you're right. I mean, yeah, he hasn't been on air for a while. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, he could have at least, I mean, that's like their second biggest pay-per-view of the year. So you're right, he could have at least had some type of, at least appearance, you know, something could have been done. So I gotta agree with you on that. So we'll move on to ROH. Got about 20 minutes left. Thank you so much for listening. Numbers 347-884-8452. Flavor of the week this week is top five people from ROH and TNA that you can bring over to develop an organization to compete with the WWE. So if you have anybody that you can think of, log on to the chat room and put on the chat and we'll say it, or call in live. We'll definitely like to hear what you have to say live here on air. So we'll go to ROH. We got about 15 minutes left. ROH, Michael Elgin defeated Matt Taven. In-ring segment with the world's greatest, with wrestling's greatest tag team in the All Nine Express. And then we saw Eddie Edwards defeat Davey Richards with interference from Jimmy Jacobs. Not a lot ROH offered us this week, contrary to what we had normally. Matt Taven is—he has yet to win a ROH TV match, but I tell you what, he gives it all. And Michael Elgin is just phenomenal to me. Just the physique and just the ruggedness is just kudos to Elgin for sure. And Eddie Edwards and David Richards, I was expecting nothing less. It was just a stellar match, and I was very happy with it. Definitely happy that they would make that kind of match. Eddie Edwards is going on this series called the Die Hard Challenge, where he competes with former world champions. He actually defeated Rhino at the previous pay per view Border Wars. And yeah, so I'm all for it. I'm all for what they're doing with Eddie Edwards, and I'm a big fan of him. Looks like David Richards is getting some heel heat. Not necessarily because he's really playing a heel. It's just that it seems like people was getting tired of him being a face, and ROH is one of the most for real crowds that you can get. And so Richards is looking like he's gravitating to a heel again.
Yeah, I'll definitely agree with you on that. it seems like there's no stopping that from happening. But,
right.
Yeah, I don't know. Just need a little more from ROH, man. I know it's only an hour, but yeah, it's past week or two. I haven't really taken much away from it other than was that about 3 weeks ago whenever they showed the Kevin team winning the title. That was really good episode, seeing that match again. But, I mean, it's, I don't know. Guess they need to catch up in their programming.
Hmm. Interesting. Looks like you're pulling a heel turn on ROH.
Yeah, I know, man. It's not enough, man. I need more wow.
I think it's really the product. I mean, they're really the production budget out of anything, but the action is just stellar. We both agree with that, but just the production budget is what makes it the number three show, because if the budget was better, it definitely could easily surpass TNA. But speaking of ROH and TNA, we're going to go to the flavor of the week. Got about 10 or so minutes left, so let's go on to the flavor of the week.
Yeah, this week's flavor of the week, wanted to put together my own show, compete with WWE. It's basically what I have here is my top five, I guess you'd say, draft picks that if I was going to put together a show to compete, and I could choose from TNA and ROH's roster, who would be my top five wrestlers I would take to go against WWE. And what I did was, just to make it a little easier on myself, I went from TNA to ROH. So I got a 3 TNA picks here and 2 ROHs, kind of an alternating thing. And then I have a knockout that I would choose. Couldn't really come to a conclusion on the tag team, so we'll see about that. But I know, if I know in my heart of hearts I can do a better job than WWE's creative team, which, you know, it's not one of those things where I'm singing with headphones on and I'm like, man, I know I sound good. No, I know I could do better than WWE's creative team. And then plus the other thing, too, with this, I didn't want to take any former WWE guys or anybody associated with their program. But, okay, here we go, singles competitors. My number one overall pick, avid listeners of the show would know that I'm a Bobby Roode guy, so that would be my first overall pick would be Bobby Roode. Like his body work, silly, you know, like just he can be funny, good heel. So kind of be like a Triple H franchise player type thing. I like that. Number two, going with Jay Lethal. It's my guy. I'd get him on TV more than any other wrestling company could. And then number three, going back to TNA, I'd pick Austin Aries just so I could start a light heavyweight division. That was my reasoning. But skill set aside, I mean, that's a no-brainer. But just to start a light heavyweight division. And I guess Jay Lethal would kind of start my mid-card division there. But number four, I went with Kevin Steen. And that's me going back to ROH. Just I know you say, oh, man, he doesn't have the look, sloppy guy. But, you know, I like him on the mic. Maybe if it is just he's a big fish in a small pond in ROH, I still like him on the mic and like his body of work in the ring. Maybe start up some type of bring the hardcore division back with him. And then number five is the phenomenal AJ Styles. A lot of respect there for AJ Styles. I haven't watched much TNA through the years, but I've seen enough, and I know that he's the man, and I know his body of work. And I really think those five, I could get it going right there, first five draft picks. And then for my knockout, I guess I had to go with someone associated with WWE. I know I said I didn't want to for the guys, but I would definitely have to pick Mickey James because before WWE let her go, she was the closest thing to them ever having another Trish or Lita. So very popular with the fans. So that would be my top five and my knockout tag team. I still not sure. Wanted to go world's wrestling's greatest tag team, but I don't know. They're a little bit old and yeah, they, like I said, they were associated with WWE before, so I don't know. Maybe I'll let you go ahead and say yours. Maybe you could think of a tag team, maybe.
Yeah, I actually have a tag team. I actually chose five from TNA and five from ROH. TNA guys would be AJ Styles, of course, Austin Aries, of course. Those were just the two best wrestlers in the company. Other than Kurt Angle, which is also in my top five. So those are three. And then fourth, Samoa Joe, just because he has that kind of all-around ability to him. And then fifth would be Bobby Roode. Those would be my TNA guys. And then ROH would be number one, not in a particular order, but number one, Eddie Edwards, just because he's just an amazing wrestler. Jay Lethal, of course. Number three would be the Briscoes. I definitely would inquire them. They're a great tag team. Not I believe they've had the ROH tag team titles 8 times, if I'm not mistaken. We'll check that out and say it on next week's show. But I believe they are 8-time champions. Number 4 would be Michael Elgin. That guy is just the stocky look and just the spin out power bomb that he does. He's just a really hard nosed wrestler, and they need more of that. Just period. They need more hard nosed heels that aren't really gimmick heavy, you know. And I think that having that element in a promotion would be unique these days, because there's so many just gimmicks in wrestling these days that it takes away from just the pureness of wrestling. And with that, I actually go with number 5. You know, my guy, Tommaso Ciampa. I'm a big Ciampa fan, and the power bomb to the lung blower finisher that he does is stellar to me. Ciampa, you know, he had a year and a half streak, and his streak was a lot interesting, a lot more interesting to me than Crimson's. I just wasn't I'm not a Crimson fan at all, but Ciampa, his work in the ring is really, really good, and he would actually bring a good manager element to the company, because his character requires a manager. You know, he's just, you know, he doesn't say anything really on the mic, and he has Truth Martini to help him out with that. So those would be my 5 of each, 10 total. So good deal. We will quickly, got about 5 minutes left, we will quickly go to the predictions for No Way Out. There's only 4 confirmed matches for the card and 1 pre-show. Pre-show matches: Brodus Clay versus David Otunga. This is just a no-brainer. Brodus Clay takes the win on this one.
Oh yeah, Brodus Clay. Nothing left. Just a starter to get the Body Call My Mama, get the crowd going before the show goes live.
Yep, exactly. Christian against Cody Rhodes for the Intercontinental title. I like what they're doing with Christian. I really hope they don't pull the plug. There's a part of me that say, okay, well, TNA, y'all let me use Flair, and we let y'all bring Christian over. So we're just going to act out of spite and pull the title from you. That would just be awful to me. But I don't think that they're that rude, you know, and heartless. So I'm going to go with Christian. I believe he retains and really brings prestige back to the Intercontinental title like he has been doing.
Oh, yeah. Christian, keep winning, keep making things. I mean, keep making the IC title, like you said, prestigious and just worth anything watching instead of just being a decorative piece for your entrance like Cody did.
Very true. Sheamus versus Dolph Ziggler. Now, this throws a wrench into what I had, because I was just a shoe-in for Sheamus to win when he was going against Alberto Del Rio, but they may pull a swerve. The only reason why I'm going to say no on this, I'm gonna go with Sheamus on this, because it seems like they're giving Ziggler the Christian effect, which is, we like your work, you're good on the mic, we really know that having you is just a great asset to the company, but we just don't have enough confidence in you to be a top guy. And we'll put you in a bunch of main event matches and you know, have you have a bunch of really good matches, but just not, we're not going to put our stock in you as a top guy. So because I still feel like they are doing that, and they will do that, that's the reason why I'm going to give the nudge to Sheamus for this one.
I I'm going to go Ziggler. I think this is the start of the shock value for the summer. They got to do something. So I can't pick against him. It's been too many losses, man. It's maybe this is just they're setting it up for it. Ziggler.
Well, I tell you what, though, they were originally going to do Orton and Sheamus at SummerSlam, and then Orton Ziggler would just be a pathway to Sheamus. So we'll see. Since they're not really, you know, believing in Orton that much right now, they may do it, but I highly, highly doubt it. But I can see where you're coming from, though. Then we see CM Punk. They were going to see CM Punk against Daniel Bryan. Not really surprising to me. Not going to be anything worth being different in my eyes. I definitely think Punk's going to take this one. And I'm sorry, Punk versus Bryan versus Kane. And so hopefully, since I didn't say Kane's name, he'll be the dark horse and win it. That would be my pick. That would be the best part of the evening for me if Kane becomes WWE champion and not lose it at the next Raw like he did in 98. But I don't see them taking this off of Punk. Right now they're trying to do – they're thinking about Punk and Show for SummerSlam. So I'm not – I don't know. I just don't see them giving the reins to Bryan either. And then Kane is most likely going to be a spot filler. So I hope something different happens. Punk would actually be my last choice out of these three, but I really don't think that they're going to add any shock value to this match, and I think they're going to keep it on Punk.
I'm going to pick the field against Punk with somehow AJ does something to influence the outcome of the match. I just need one of these world titles to change. So, yeah, I'm going the field against Punk. So either Bryan or Kane with AJ interference, whether it be on purpose or accident.
So out of the two, who would you pick?
I don't know who I would, but who I would want to would be Kane.
Okay. All right. Then lastly, we got Cena and Show. Show wins. Everything's good. Show loses. Laurinaitis is fired. We got 2 minutes left, and this doesn't require any much either to me. Cena wins. They somehow pull a swerve and see Laurinaitis may come back. I'm not quite sure, but I think Cena takes this one. Another main event for him, by the way.
Yeah. I'm going to go Big Show, since this pay-per-view, top to bottom, is too predictable and too short.
Call on that. Yes, as far as the predictability, I firmly agree with that. So thank you so much for tuning in. Great show today. Next week we'll be here. Get ready. 347-884-8452. Write the number down. Call in. Next week's flavor of the week is we just kind of carrying on to the TNA, WWE versus TNA Dream Card. If we made a dream pay-per-view, what would be the matches? So thank you so much for tuning in. Follow us at Crave Wrestling on Twitter. Like us, Crave Wrestling on Facebook. Any ideas, send to cravewrestling@gmail.com. Thank you so much, and we will be here next week. God bless.